folks. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Yes, this is a show. Albin and I will be performing for you. I'll be playing the role of Eric Metaxas, the host. Albin, you could play any role you want. Who do you want to be today?
Okay, I'm going to be Mike Lindell. Use the code Eric.
You can't be Mike Lindell because you look different from the guy behind you who looks actually strikingly like Mike Lindell. Yes, he's our sponsor, and we want to send people to that. We've got a lot to cover here. First of all, in hour one today, I'm talking to a hero. A hero. In our next segment, I'm talking to Andy Ngo. It's spelled N-G-O. He is a citizen journalist who has covered Antifa. He has a new book coming out about them. That's amazing. In hour two, I'm talking to the recently fired head of the Voice of America. Wait till you hear about that. Biden fired him. Of course, it's Biden's prerogative to put forth, his less robustly American view of America. And so he wouldn't want Michael Peck, who's probably some kind of white nationalist or something like that. Okay, so speaking of white nationalism, Daryl Strawberry is my guest tonight on TBN. If you watch this show on TBN, typically is a program where they talk about God. As you know, I'm an atheist, and I talk about what I want to talk about. But tonight, I'm talking to Daryl Strawberry, the amazing, amazing Daryl Strawberry. He played for the New York Mets, for the New York Yankees. The guy is just an amazing athlete, but also, huge power hitter, hit a lot of home runs, but had struggles with drugs, found God. And I got to tell you, he's become a friend. He's amazing. So that's on TBN tonight. But speaking of power hitters, sad news. Henry Hank Aaron died, 86 years old. I have to tell you, at some point, I wanted to talk about my new book, Fish Out of Water, where I write about my childhood. I had this in the book, but I took it out because it was too long. But I will never forget it. It was April 8th, 1974. I was 10 years old, and my habit at age 10, it was like, this is so funny to think about this. I was still young that it was like, okay, you got to take a bath. No. You take your bath, and your brother will watch the ball game, and when you're done, he'll take a bath, whatever. So I was literally in the bath. I mean, I remember like it was yesterday when my brother screams, Hank hit 715. Hank hit 715. So I missed it, of course, right?
Oh, man.
But I remember that this hero, you talk about an American hero, Henry Aaron, hit one more home run than Babe Ruth had in his career, 714. He got death threats from actual white supremacists. If you want to know what a white supremacist is, by the way, tune into this program because we'll explain it to you. They didn't like the idea of a black man, Hank Aaron, hitting more home runs than a white guy, Babe Ruth. Now, if that doesn't strike you as unbelievably stupid, you perhaps aren't playing with what we call a full deck.
Yeah.
In the Aramaic, I guess that would be one of your pilot lights has blown out. I think that's the Aramaic version.
You know, I gotta say so. I wish you would have put that story in and not the time that you had an accident in the department store. Bradley's. I thought that was a little funny.
I know that's the most edgy thing in the whole book, Bradley's incident, right?
Yeah.
But you'll notice if you read it carefully, no bad words are used.
No,
it's all in your dirty mind, Albert.
Read it again.
And you tell me, where do I say anything? I don't know what you're talking about. It's all pure metaphor, as pure metaphor as ever has been. Listen. And that was about a year before, year and a half before the Hank Aaron thing. But Hank Aaron ended up hitting 756, I think, career home runs. This was without steroids. So when you're thinking about somebody like Barry Bonds, Barry Bonds? No, not Barry Bonds. Who am I thinking of?
Barry Bonds. Yeah, it's Barry, not Bobby. Yeah,
I keep getting it confused with Gary U.S. Bonds.
Okay, it's 755, by the way, home runs.
755. So Barry Bonds, who was super juiced up on steroids, you know, was he was a monster before he took steroids. But obviously there's a big asterisk hanging over his achievements, as with Mark McGwire, because of the steroids. Hank Aaron, as lean a bass player, as lanky a bass player as ever. And when you think of people like DiMaggio, they just had this kind of lean, lanky look, and yet just incredible power. Hank Aaron, again, who died, I believe today or late yesterday, 86 years old, a great hero, and somebody who really had to live through the ugliness of genuine racism, as Jackie Robinson did. Jackie Robinson, I write about in my book, Seven Men. These were the real pioneers who made it possible for other Black Americans to do all kinds of things and to be inspired. And we need to remember them as people who suffered under genuine racism and who knew what it was like to be heroes in the face of real ugliness and threats of violence. Hank Aaron, again, a hero. I'll never forget April 8th, 1974. When he hit number 715. And it's a funny thing, Albin, because what's so bizarre, this is like a, like you couldn't script this. At the end of the 1973 season, he was coming closer and closer. And at the end of the season, in October, he hits number 714, tying Babe Ruth. And all through the months, we're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for baseball to start again. It's crazy. Yeah. And so, I guess it was opening day, April 8th. I was in the bathtub. I'm bitter. You can tell I'm still angry about this.
Yeah, I know.
I was in the bathtub and I missed it. But, whoa, what a hero. Okay, we got to move on. We got a lot to talk about.
A lot.
I mentioned who we're talking to in a couple of minutes. I want to say, folks, that Twitter has kicked me off. So I think they're going to reinstate me in 4 days. But I'm trying to launch a book. I have a book coming out called Fish Out of Water. A lot of it is very funny. And I was reading it yesterday, just kind of flipping through. And I just thought, I can't believe like just how loony some of the stories. This is the true story of my life up until my 25th birthday, basically. Some of it's very serious. Some of it's insane, as Albin mentioned.
It's crazy. I'm telling you.
But you can't launch a book if your social media platforms are down. So I need your help, whatever you can do. When I do get up back on Twitter and Facebook is shadow banning me, some of our videos are being taken down from YouTube. Hey, this is the price you pay, you know, for speaking the truth. But I just want to say anything you can do to help get the word out about my book, Fish Out of Water, Search for the Meaning of Life. Oh, look, I just happen to have a copy, Albin. There you go. The cover, by the way, that photograph was taken by my mom when my mom and dad were on a date at the Statue of Liberty in 1958. And it wasn't my idea to use it. The publicists for this book, Elliot and Suzanne Balaban, amazing, amazing folks. Yeah. They saw the photo and they said, that's the cover. You got it.
I love it too. I love it. I think it's so precious, really, seriously. It's a great cover.
And I think my father comes out as the hero of the book. I get tears in my eyes when I think about it.
Oh, yeah. Your dad is amazing. He really is in this book and in real life, because he had a nice birthday wish for me when I turned whatever back in November this year.
I know. Isn't that cute? I love it. Yeah. Fish Out of Water is coming out and I'll be tweeting. It's gotten amazing reviews so far and blurbs, which thrills me because it's a great read and it's the perfect book, I would say, to share with people who are not on the same page as you are faith wise or maybe politically. There's no politics and there's only faith right at the end. Okay. Right at the time when we come back, I'm talking to the hero, Andy Ngo. Don't go away.
I'm taking my place.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back to the Ehrlichman Taxes Show. As you may know, there is an organization out there called Antifa. Tremendous irony. They say they're against fascism, and whoopsie daisy, they're tremendously fascist. Isn't that clever? I have the great privilege right now of speaking to someone who has been an absolute hero in reporting on this organization, particularly at a time when the mainstream media has not only dropped the ball, but incinerated the ball very carefully. Right now, it's my privilege to speak with Andy Ngo, pronounced No, but spelled N-G-O, Andy Ngo. Welcome to this program. Wonderful to have you.
Thank you.
Your book, new book, coming out the same day my new book comes out, but the books are very different, so people will buy both of them. Your book is titled Unmasked, Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. Andy, anybody who has been following any of this stuff, particularly on Twitter, from which I am now banned, I guess, for the next 4 days, it's a week, they know you. You have been very bravely at the forefront of this from the beginning when you were abused and harassed by some of these vicious Antifa folks who threw a milkshake on you and roughed you up. And you have been a hero to so many people. So first of all, thank you for what you've been doing for all of us who are not doing it. Tell us a little bit about your story, Andy, because people want to know, where did you grow up and how did you find yourself being a sort of guerrilla journalist at these strange times in America?
So I first started covering Antifa, not knowing what they were, back in November 2016. So after the surprise electoral win of Donald Trump, the reaction of people in my city, Portland, Oregon, was to take to the streets to not just voice their grievances, but actually to riot violently. And I was a student journalist at that time for the student paper at Portland State University, where I was doing a graduate program. And that was the first time that I came face to face with my own eyes with marauding groups of organized street thugs who were wearing the same black uniforms and black masks and carrying weapons, smashing up property, businesses, starting fires, all allegedly in the name of anti-fascism. And I just continued to cover it because political violence then became very routine and normal in Portland through 2017, 2018, 2019. Portland, in fact, was becoming infamous as the epicenter of American political violence for these shocking scenes of violence on the streets. And all the while, the coverage from the legacy media, as well the local press, was giving cover to these violent extremists. They were not calling Antifa Antifa for one. They were describing them as anti-fascists who were opposing Nazis and the far right and white supremacists. But what I was seeing was that they were indiscriminate in who they were brutally attacking and assaulting. The label of fascist was applied not just to neo-Nazis, but actually to any Trump supporter, any conservative, and actually any American who even waves an American flag. They've even attacked one of their own supporters because he made the mistake of bringing a US flag to one of the protests. So, and my criticism through my writings in the Wall Street Journal and getting to speak out on social media eventually made me a target. And in 2019, they didn't just rough me up that summer while I was covering a protest. They actually beat me with their fists that were reinforced with these hardened gloves. And it landed me in the hospital with a brain bleed. So I had a brain injury from that. And just in the time since, I've been continuing to essentially shout from the rooftops to local elected officials about this threat that was growing exponentially quick in the city. And unfortunately, I was ignored and smeared by colleagues who share my profession as somebody who they said that if I'm against Antifa, then that must mean I'm pro-fascism. So all that led eventually to what I had been predicting, which is that in 2020, Antifa really put the city of Portland and other American cities under siege. Portland stood out because there were more than 120 days of nightly riots. So like, just think about that. Like, as bad as everything happened on the 6th of January in Capitol Hill, that was happening every night and worse in my city. And it was people who was also targeting federal property. But at that time, the way the media framed it and politicians framed it, they were okay with it because it was seen as opposition to the Trump administration.
I have to say what is obvious, that it's very hard for anyone, I think, to process what is happening in America right now. In other words, what you've just described, it seems like something out of the proverbial dystopian novel. It simply doesn't seem that it could happen, because I think most of us have assumed that our leaders are competent enough to separate fact from fiction and to do the basics. We're just talking about the basics, not to do anything heroic, but to simply to do their jobs and protect their citizens and to protect property. It's the basic stuff of which the social contract is made, and here we are. But of course, they've not been doing that. So before I talk to you about your personal experiences, I want to ask you, obviously, in your new book, Unmasked, which I hope people will buy, you talk about this, but I want to ask you, for those of us out here who are not on the inside, what is amazing is that we don't seem to hear anything in what you call the legacy media about who these people are, where they have come from, who is funding them. Can you tell us where they came from? In other words, you said 2016, suddenly they're protesting as soon as Trump is elected. Where did they come from? Who are they? Who organized them? I'm amazed. Even I don't know the answer to this.
So I go into the detail of all this in the book, but to sum up to viewers and listeners, so Portland as a city, Seattle as well, sister city, has always prided itself on being a left-wing political monoculture. So people there are more than just Democrat, they're to the hard left, and they quite revel in that. And a lot of them are just alternative and weird for the sake of being different, if no other reason.
Sure.
And so naturally within that context, there's been a fringe of the far left that has operated on politically. However, and this is the space that Antifa inhabited, the difference is in starting November 2016 and going back actually some months earlier before that, they were really, Antifa and their far left extremist allies, really able to move right in the middle of the mainstream left because of this pretext of saying that they were there to oppose what is now an incoming fascist regime because of Trump's election.
Right.
And so they were given their excesses, which are normally should have been and traditionally would be rejected by the liberal left, things such as political violence, assaults, vandalism, looting, and whatnot. These things were now given approval because it was seen as opposing something that needed all of us to fight together. I mean, all the comparisons, Trump's being compared to Hitler, federal officers being called the Gestapo. And so it created this atmosphere and environment where all of the criminal activities of Antifa and company, and I include Black Lives Matter in that, were seen as legitimate responses. And so police departments, particularly after 2015, because of what happened in Ferguson, Missouri, they have just been continually and exponentially delegitimized. So with the weakened law enforcement and as well as the approval of those on city council and mayors for what was happening, it led to this political left-wing violence being normalized and accepted, which is why those who were loudest in condemning what happened on the 6th of January in Capitol Hill were silent when people carried out similar activities in dozens of other American cities throughout 2020.
Well, so I still want to know where they came from, so to speak. In other words, there seems to be clearly coordination. There seems to be organization. That's not the kind of thing that if it was just a group of people deciding they want to get together and protest or be violent, they wouldn't dress the same, behave the same. There seems to be, as I say, coordination. I've just got a few seconds left, but in the 10 seconds we have, tell us what you think and then we'll come back.
They exist because they do actually organize through networks of formal groups.
All right. Well, listen, I'm thrilled to have you as my guest, Andy. Folks, it's Andy Ngo. It's spelled N-G-O, Andy Ngo. The book is Unmasked, Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. We'll be right back.
And watches the ship that goes sailing.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to Andy Ngo. It's spelled N-G-O. I suspect you have seen his name around if you're on social media and if you're following people who seem to be at the forefront of actually doing journalism. There's so few out there that it's hard to miss them. Andy, I want to go back to where Antifa came from. They don't seem to have come from nowhere. They do seem to be coordinated. What can we know? In other words, I think many people think that George Soros funds them. What do you think is happening with them and with the BLM violence?
So I seek to dispel misconceptions about Antifa in the book. And one of the misconceptions is that people believe that there is no formal organized element to them, that it's really just people coming together spontaneously to oppose the right. That's not the case. And I know that because I've been leaked documents from a person who went through the recruitment process in Rose City Antifa. And these documents are published in full in the book. Rose City Antifa is the original American Antifa, the largest and oldest Antifa organization in the US. They operate out of Portland. So what you will see with that group, and it's part of a larger network called the Torch Network, and they all follow the same curriculum or playbook, if you will. There's a recruitment process, there's a vetting process, there's a radicalization process, there's secret meetings, there are trainings. So people who there are, you don't go from just being somebody who's on the hard left to somebody who wears the uniform and takes explosives and knives and other weapons to these riots with the intent of harming other people and destroying property. There's this whole process that happens. And Rose City Antifa is one of the prime examples of how that recruitment and radicalization happens. Unfortunately, it's all done secretively, and journalists who should be curious about this stuff are not. So we've known very little. I believe I'm the first person to publish any inside information about Antifa in this book. And as for how they organize and how they're funded, it actually doesn't come from a single person who's providing secret money to them. It's actually very simple, and it happens right openly in front of us. They crowdfund, and they crowdfund with the tacit approval, essentially, of big tech. So they organize campaigns on GoFundMe. They will make accounts on Cash App and Venmo, and these get circulated through their social media networks, which are huge and massive to the point where they will literally generate millions of dollars. So the Minnesota Freedom Fund, for example, raised $35 million with the help of people like now VP Kamala Harris and other staffers who work on the Biden campaign, celebrities in that bail fund was used to bail out rioters in Minneapolis and St. Paul and other cities. And in addition to rioters, they're also bailing out people accused of attempted murder, attempted rape. In Portland, a similar bail fund raised over $1.3 million. So they've created this whole system essentially out in the open of carrying out all the activities really in plain sight with no opposition. And so, the people who were under the belief that Antifa would disappear or be weakened because Biden won this entirely wrong analysis. We've had many, many riots in the Pacific Northwest since November. We've had rioting on Inauguration Day in Portland and Seattle that were extremely extremely violent and advertised weeks ahead of time on Twitter and Facebook and other places. So these activities, a lot of it is done secretively in terms of how they radicalize and recruit and who their members are. But most of that activity is done in the open.
I'm just astounded. I've always been astounded by this. I mean, this is going on forever. But the cowardice and the incompetence and the lack of fundamental values that we see in our ruling classes, especially on the left, but unfortunately not only on the left, to take action. In other words, if ever anything would qualify as domestic terrorism, certainly this would. I mean, we have innumerable instances of violence, physical violence against human beings like you, but also property damage, incalculable property damage. This is domestic terrorism. It has a political goal. And as you've been telling us, and as you tell us in your new book, Unmasked, we don't seem to be dealing with it. The other day when Biden was inaugurated, he referred in his inaugural speech to white nationalism and domestic terrorism as the problems he must deal with, we must deal with, and we must wipe out. And I knew when he said that, that he was demonizing basically Trump supporters, trying to smear them as white nationalists, as bigots, as violent. And again, the irony, even though he has been elected, we have Antifa. I think just yesterday I saw on Twitter that they had a big banner. We don't want Biden. We want whatever it is.
Revenge with the photo of a Kalashnikov rifle on it.
Okay, so there's irony in that we have very, very foolish people like Kamala Harris ostensibly supporting them. And now that she is one heartbeat away from the presidency, or in the case of Biden, one heart murmur away from the presidency, she finds herself, you know, not the hero of these people. Again, we have 10 seconds and then we'll come back. But what do you think is happening?
Well, the Democrats have fed and grown this dragon, and now I think it's too big for them to slay. And you could see in Portland on the Inauguration Day, the rioters actually destroyed the headquarters of the Oregon Democrat Party.
Isn't that sweet? Hey, folks, we're going to be right back. I'm talking to Andy Ngo. It's spelled N-G-O. The book is Unmasked. Please get a copy. We'll be right back.
Everybody's going places, doing things. Look at all the smiles.
Folks, I'm talking to the author of a book coming out in about a week called Unmasked, Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. The author is Andy Ngo. It's spelled N-G-O. Andy, you are now in Europe, because the violence in Portland, where you were doing your reporting on Antifa, threatened you. What is going on right now? What do you see happening? I don't know why you went as far as Europe, but what can you tell us?
I left because, well, in Portland, I've been there as the riots were occurring months on end throughout 2020. And throughout all of that, I was really on borrowed time, in that these people who had tried to kill me before had showed up to my home on multiple occasions. They put out my address, they'll put out in real time if any of them half think that they see me in public. They even misidentified several people they thought was me before. So and all of this was reported to the local authorities, and some of it was reported to the FBI, and nothing was done. Even when names of suspects were given, nothing was done. All the people that were involved in beating me in 2019, some of those people, with my legal counsel, we've identified some of them, and that was provided to the local authorities, and it didn't lead to any arrests. So I think when the DOJ last year described some jurisdictions in the US as anarchist jurisdictions, I don't think that's hyperbole. You do see a breakdown in the rule of law essentially people can riot all over the city, kill Andy Ngo, murder Andy Ngo, and incite this type of violence and do it on Twitter as well and other social media platforms. They'll show up to my home and they face no consequences. And other than moving out into the middle of nowhere, that's no way for me to live. And so temporarily I have left the country. But even beyond Portland, Seattle, even the region of the Pacific Northwest, I just feel really that the present and the future of the U.S. appears really bleak, because all of the variables that have allowed Antifa to grow into the monster that it is today, those variables are still there. This whole excuse of using Trump and blaming him, accusing him of being a fascist dictator, that was from the beginning, just a pretext and excuse to justify the extremism. And with that out of the way, I think they will continue on their agenda.
Well, these folks seem to me to be Marxist. I mean, you know, when you, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. They seem in every way to be Marxist. I guess it's strange to me to think that, you have emerged as this kind of a hero. I mean, you're openly gay. I don't think you came out in the beginning as pro-Trump or anything like that. How do you find yourself politically now? In other words, things are so strange that here you are, a lone heroic voice against the perpetrators of fascist and Marxist tactics. Where were you before this, and where do you find yourself today?
I would call myself a conservative. I tried to avoid that label early on in my journalistic career, but I found that of all the things that I'm called, that's actually one of the more charitable things. And regarding other aspects of my identity, such as my sexual orientation and my family's background being refugees from the Socialist Republic of Vietnam, it's much harder for my detractors to throw accusations of me being a white supremacist, a white racist. They have done that very spuriously against other people and gotten them canceled, kicked off social media, had their lives destroyed. And they tried to do the same to me. And when they couldn't do that, they tried beating me. And I still persevere. I mean, I still write for mainstream publications. I'm still on mainstream television. So I'm hoping now with this book, though, is that for readers that they can get the accurate information about Antifa all in one source in a way that's easily accessible, easy to understand. And that, you know, I'm hoping to reach across the aisle as well. I know I've been very critical of Democrats, but they need to recognize that this threat threatens them as well, because these Antifa extremists are working to abolish the United States. It doesn't stop with just abolishing police. And if you look at what they say, and what they do, and what their literature says, when they say that they want to burn down the system, they do mean it literally. They believe that they can create from the ashes a new utopia. So it's a cult-like ideology, and that these people don't believe they can ever go too far in achieving their goals. And that's what really makes them dangerous. And they don't hide their violent extremism. And actually, you'll see that they celebrate footage of them harming other people, assaulting people. They celebrate that. They celebrate when people, law enforcement gets killed. They celebrate it when they kill the Trump supporter in Portland by a man who left behind a manifesto saying, quote, "I'm 100% Antifa." They celebrated that. They danced in the streets. I saw it. And outside the Justice Center. So these are people who have no shame in their open wickedness. And that's what we should be concerned about, is that no act can be too far for them.
Well, as I said earlier, this is the definition of domestic terrorism and criminal activity. And the question is only why law enforcement and local, state, and federal government is not stepping in to protect the people of the United States. I can't fathom it. Where do you suppose this is going? In other words, if they have been openly against Biden, which is, of course, in some ways a delicious turn of events, as sick as it is. Where do you suppose this goes from here? Do you think Biden and company will find the courage necessary to prosecute them for their crimes?
Well, the rules of the game that have been set up from going back several years now is that if you criticize Antifa, that must mean you're pro-fa, pro-fascist. If you're against or critical of Black Lives Matter, that must mean you're against Black Americans. So these are the rules that the liberal establishment have set up. And I don't see how they're going to be able to work around that, because any time that you use the force of the law to prosecute violent criminals who are affiliated with these movements, then it's going to be turned around on them and they're going to be framed as being pro-fascist or whatever. I think what will likely happen going forward is just further attempts by Antifa to destabilize essentially weak governments in
hang on, Andy, forgive me. We're going to go to a hard break here. We'll be right back with Andy Ngo. The book is Unmasked.
Dark as shame, darling, dark as shame. Thank you for
folks. Before we get back to discussing things with Andy Ngo, NGO, we're just going to take this tiny break. Albin wants to share. And also in hour two, we've got our second guest coming up after we talk to Andy. For the first segment, we'll go to our second guest, Michael Pack, with the Voice of America, fired by the Biden administration. But Albin, you want to share the winners, CESI. Yes. We freed slaves in the Sudan. I mean, this is so beautiful. Great things. In the midst of all the turmoil, we get to do something good. These are the folks that were randomly chosen. And who are they?
Okay, I'm going to tell you right off the bat here. First of all, over $400,000 was raised by you, the listeners and fans of this show. God bless you. And thank you so much. Freeing, 1,600 plus slaves from the Sudan. Unbelievable. Okay. And by the way, make sure you sign up for the newsletter so that you can be on top of all of this.
You just reminded me. I've been meaning to say this for like months, and I keep forgetting. When you sign up for our newsletter, you go to ericmetaxas.com. And folks, please do that. Please, because we're being deplatformed here and there and whatever. It's the only way I can reach you. Sign up at ericmetaxas.com. But here's the key. If you can't sign up, if it rejects your email, we are trying to get to the bottom of this. All you have to do is email us where it says contact, email us, say, couldn't get on the regular way, please add me, and we will add you. Yeah. So most people can get on ericmetaxas.com newsletter. If you can't, if you try a couple of times and it just doesn't do it, just email us where it says contact and say, please add me, and we will add you. We want to keep in touch with you. I'm going to be putting a lot of fun stuff that has to do with the book Fish Out of Water, some photos that are not in the book, really crazy stuff, some photos that are in the book. It's got a color insert of photographs that honestly, I cannot believe that the publisher was willing to go to this length. And I just, there's color photographs and black and white photographs. And if you have a black and white set, you'll just have to take our word for it. But, you know, Albin,
I still didn't announce a winner, but go ahead.
No, I know. But what I was going to say was we're going to do a contest with this book as well. And we're going to send signed copies to you and so on and so forth. But what I really wanted to say is if you sign up for our newsletter, we will be sending out excerpts from the book. Some little videos where I'm reading excerpts from the book, but the only place to get that is if you sign up for my newsletter. So Albin, the big winners.
Okay. The two big winners. Okay. We had three previously. Now we have two for 2021. They are Deborah Crook, C-R-O-O-K of Crescent, Oklahoma, and Marion Ivy, I-V-E-Y of Mission Viejo, California. So you're winning all kinds of great books and stuff from Eric and also Hamster Homes and a few other things.
It's going to be signed books courtesy Albin and Eric. Isn't this great? Praise the Lord. Am I allowed to say that?
You are.
We could get taken down for that. We praise the Lord. I always want to take it to the next level. We want to praise the Lord Jesus HaMoshiach, Yeshua HaMoshiach. Okay, so when we come back, I'm going to continue my conversation with Andy Ngo, NGO. We're living through strange times, but I just want to say I have no doubt that God has a plan. Now, if you don't believe in God, it doesn't change the fact that he exists and has a plan and loves you beyond anything you could comprehend. Just saying, you don't have to take my word for it, but it's like talking about atomic structure. You don't have to believe in it. It's just, it's just there.
It is what it is.
Until you're ready. It is what it is. All right. So when we come back in hour two, we continue a conversation with Andy Ngo. Please follow us on YouTube while we're there. Rumble. We're going to put our controversial videos on Rumble. They're already there. We'll be back.